Welcome to Pathways to Wisdom, a show about journey and legacy, contribution, and the meaning of life. We all have interesting stories about the paths we have chosen, the people we have touched, and the wisdom that comes with living life to the fullest. We have a choice each day to live into our greatness, and our greatness is informed by what we do, how and who we love, and what we believe about ourselves and others. Now here's the host of Pathways to Wisdom, Deborah Brown.
Well, good day, everyone. Good day, good day, good day, and I do mean that in all respects. And I am so pleased today to have my guest. Sarah McLean is with me, and we are going to have an amazing conversation about transformation through meditation and all that comes with that. Sarah McLean is a noted Hay House author and contemporary meditation teacher who makes meditation accessible to everyone. Since 1993, she has taught meditation to thousands of people from all over the world. As the director of the McLean Meditation Institute in Sedona, Arizona, she offers a variety of meditation training, facilitates self-discovery retreats, and certifies meditation instructors. Sarah was the founding program director of the Chopra Center for Well-Being and has lived and studied in a Zen Buddhist monastery, meditated in ashrams and temples throughout India and the Far East, spent time in an Afghan refugee camp, bicycled the Silk Route from Pakistan to China, trekked the Grand Canyon and the Golden Triangle, and taught English to Tibetan Buddhist nuns in Dharamsala. You've made me exhausted just trying to get that out. I'm stuttering over my words. I am so excited to have you. Welcome to Pathways to Wisdom.
Thank you so much. And, you know, I know that bio's a lot, and I often say you don't have to read any of it, but it is fairly extensive, and most people haven't had the opportunity to pursue the various origins and the way that meditation looks in the world, and I'm really lucky to have had the opportunity to do that. And I love being here on your show, so thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And what I would like to have you do is expand on that bio, which I butchered in a couple of places, but that's okay. I know you forgive me.
Yes.
And I want you to give me what I call your two-minute movie, and that is your life, laser beam style, going as far back as you'd like to go, coming forward to today with me.
In 2 minutes, well, I'll do my best. Well, fortunately, you covered a lot of it. But let's talk about, I was one of those kids who loved Nancy Drew mysteries and read every single one of them. And I think the impulse there was to find out the mystery of life itself, even though that's what it looked like. I didn't necessarily know what else I was looking for. And I ended up ordering, you know, the Time Life books on the secrets of the pyramids and ESP. But none of that was really what I was looking for. What I was really looking for was the secret of who am I and why are we here. And as you can see from my bio, I really looked externally for that. I went all over the world to all these secret places and all these fabulous wisdom traditions. And what I ended up finding out was the real secrets were what was going on inside me, inside my consciousness, inside my mind, inside, and how that is reflected in the world. See, there is a real mystery there about the unseen. And I'm talking about things like emotions and your soul and God and the spirituality itself and understanding, you know, the unseen in values and what integrity is and what expanded states of awareness is. So what I ended up doing is just diving in once I kind of got a lifeline there working with the Chopra Center. And how that happened was I was reading a book review one day, and I think your audience, and this will be one more minute, so I'll be maybe 4 minutes, your audience might relate to this, is, you know, you're looking for clues as to what to do next. The old way's not working, the new way hasn't been revealed, and you have to remain open. And I was just in that space when I was reading a book review in 1989 about a book by a man that I had never heard of, Deepak Chopra. And I hadn't read the book. I didn't know who this man was, but I loved the review and what it was talking about, which was how to create balance in your mind and body and the spiritual essence of that as well. And I was always into the natural approaches, and this sort of made my whole body vibrate. And that was the first clue that I was on the right path. So that's my 3 minute, 4 minute, whatever that was.
That was great. And I believe that what you learned from him at that time was the ancient wisdom and that mind body health concepts that were new ideas back in 89, 90, you know, the early
90s. Exactly.
And
yeah.
It's not new anymore, but it may still be confusing or another mystery that some of us have to kind of peel back some of the layers and say, okay, what is what you're doing, this mainstream meditation that you teach? Because, you know, for what you're teaching, you don't have to have special clothes or go to an ashram or, you know, travel like you've done, right? You just you go inside.
You go inside, but you do need, you know, everybody needs some guidance. And I know most of your listeners, and I was one of these people, you know, I pretend to be meditating. I try to meditate. I close my eyes, settle in, sit the way I thought I was supposed to sit, and wait for the magic to happen. But instead of magic, what would happen is I'd start to listen in on my internal monologue, this constant conversation I'm having with myself, and that was far from spiritual, far from peaceful. And that's probably why I set off to find, you know, the traditions and find the secrets. And the truth is, yes, you're right about the new paradigm in healing. Prior to, and I don't think it was in my bio, I was in the military. I joined the military to be a spy. See, there I wanted to be the Nancy Drew. Nancy Drew beats Private Benjamin. I wanted to kind of do that. And I ended up, instead of doing the intelligence, going into the medical field and studying the effects of stress and post-traumatic stress disorder in soldiers. So that was really as close as people were coming to understanding the mind and the body and the effects of stress on the nervous system. So when I read about this book that was, you know, this new book coming out, it was all about how these natural approaches to healing really help to reduce stress and have a major effect on the mind and body. And I'm talking about things like yoga and herbs and taste therapy, if you can imagine, and aromatherapy and color therapy and massage and acupressure and meditation and even some astrological things and music therapy. And it was so exciting for me to see that synergistically all of these natural all this natural information can work together to bring about balance in the nervous system. So what I did after I read that book review, bought the book, called the number in the back of the book and volunteered to work at the Chopra Center at the time, which was called the Maharishi Ayurveda Health Center, run by the TM organization in Massachusetts. I went there. I dropped everything. At the time, I was a real estate agent in Washington, D.C. I was about 27 years old, and I dropped everything to immerse myself in this knowledge. That's how powerful that moment was for me. And here's what I found out. This ancient wisdom is called Ayurveda. It's from ancient India. It's 5,000 years old. Ayur means life and Veda means knowledge. And I went to find out how to make this work for me. And what I found out was the primary approach to healing is through awareness. It makes sense now. It makes sense when I'm going to explain it to you. You cannot make changes in your lifestyle, in make appropriate choices, unless you're aware. Now, that sounds so simple, but it's such a foreign concept for so many people. So awareness of how you feel, awareness of what your integrity is, whether you say yes when you mean yes and no when you mean no, awareness of expression, how to express yourself, just generally speaking, becoming aware of what your environment is like and what you're putting in your body, so simple. And what I found out with the ancient, this healing science was they said perfect health is through perfect digestion. Now, that sounds like something you're going to eat and you want to digest it, you know, well, but they're really talking about digesting and being present for your life, every moment of your life, taking the nourishment in the moment and completely digesting it, and also being aware of the toxicity so you don't ingest that. I mean, it sounds so simple. And the primary approach to this healing method was through meditation. I'll explain more about that later, but for me it was so mind-blowing because up until then, most people were treating the body like a machine.
Well, exactly. And what I'm getting from some of this, too, is how East meets West in medicine now as well, you know, with Dr. Oz, all these people who are bringing in, like, the what is he doing now? He's got the Reiki healing and all that stuff as part of his practice. And, you know, he's not poo-pooing the Eastern medical ways and all that stuff, because it makes sense that these things that have been here for centuries work. They've worked for a culture, and why wouldn't we bring them to the West and say, okay, what is this all about? How can I make this work for me in my life and have, you know, more of everything that a person wants?
Well, I think our culture is a little different. You know, we all have heard that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, but we don't actually do anything like that. Yeah, we watch our diet, and maybe we exercise, but, you know, the majority of people are not even aware of what's going on, how they feel, what the subtle changes in their body, what's going on when they're under stress. And so ultimately, we have become a culture that expects to treat the disease as it arises, whereas some of this Reiki and aromatherapy and some of these other more subtle yet and more natural yet powerful therapies are more to keep the body in balance before the manifestation of disease, dis-ease, you know, before it manifests into something that's hard to treat with the subtler aspects. Now, I'll give you a personal story. You might have read it in my book, but, you know, I was working with the Chopra Center, and I did not know this at the time, but I had cancer when I started to work there. And I was a young woman, you know, and I started to work there, and I felt this lump in my thyroid. And I didn't know it was my thyroid. I wasn't clear about what was going on there. But I said, I think there's something going on here. And I ended up finding out, yes, indeed, I had had cancer. The lump had been there for a year or so. And I went to Deepak, and at the time I called him Dr. Chopra, and I said, you know, he's an endocrinologist. That's who treats these thyroid conditions. And I said, can I have a mantra that will help to address this? And he said, I'll give you a mantra. I'll give you a healing sound. I'd already been doing a mantra-type meditation. The word mantra simply means instrument for the mind, and, of course, the mind affects the body. But he said, yes, I'll give you this healing sound. But he said, I want you to go and get that tumor taken out. It was cancer. And he said, because the body, the physical body, is dense. The mind is more, obviously, life and more flexible. The spirit is even lighter and more flexible. But the physical body is the expression and expresses some of the imbalances that can occur in the mind and in the soul, really, or the expression of the soul. And so he says, I want to give you this sound, but you need to go get that taken out, because even if you make a complete change in your mind, your body may not catch up. So it's good to know that. I mean, this kind of mind-body medicine isn't magic. It isn't to be used the way that we use a blood pressure pill or have, you know, some surgery. It's to be used as a way of keeping the balance.
Well, it's also not one or the other.
Right.
I mean, that's a surprise to me, what you're telling me. And thank God that he is an endocrinologist, and that he is so wise and said, we can't do that with a mantra. You got to go get that taken out.
Yeah, it's you know what that is? It's just totally balanced, and it's not woo-woo. And you know, when the whole mind-body health kind of craze started in the early 90s, a lot of people were going into this discussion about, oh, if you have a disease, like I did, if you have cancer, you caused it. You know, maybe on some esoteric karmic level, yes, that may be true. But you know what was happening, and this happened for me too. People started to blame themselves for having disease. And yeah, maybe they could have been more aware. Maybe they could have caught it earlier. But the truth is, we never know why things are happening. We don't know why famine, earthquakes, you know, why it rains. We don't know why these things happen when people die or et cetera. But what we do know is that when it happens, we have to be responsive to it. But initially with this whole New Age paradigm, which was sort of old age, people started to blame themselves for being sick. And that was really a setback for the mind-body healing modalities that are now so mainstream.
I can imagine that was quite a surprise to the people who know better. Yes, like, no, that's not what we're talking about.
I know, but you can imagine that happening.
Absolutely, I do. All right, now my next question is there a difference between prayer and meditation?
I love that question. You know, you can make your whole life a walking, living prayer, and you can make your whole life a walking, living meditation. So in its absolute sense, there's no difference. But let's talk about practical sense. Some people have said that prayer is talking to God and meditation is listening. Now, that sounds good, and I totally aligned with that initially. That sounded perfect, but that's not what I really, truly experience. This is what I experience. I experience prayer as conversing with God, talking to God, whether it's the short prayer of, help me, or help them, or, you know, can you please help me, you know, change this for me here. But meditation, and this goes along with that perfect health through perfect digestion, meditation is about purifying your nervous system, purifying the stress in your nervous system that helps you, when you purify it, you can then listen to God anytime, anywhere. So, for instance, you pray to God or pray to whomever, and you go into meditation, you purify your nervous system. It's like taking a giant Q-tip and getting rid of the stress that keeps you from communing with God as you walk through the world. So I really say there is a difference. You know, prayer is more of an intention. Prayer is more of a specific dialogue where meditation is really about purifying the nervous system so that you can walk in with more integrity, walk with more compassion, walk with more love, walk with more authenticity in the world. And that communion is more available because you're not distracted. You're more in the present moment. You're less distracted by stress. And so meditation makes it possible to be in communion with the divine.
That is amazing. That is amazing. I like that, talking to God, listening, and how it all really blends or amplifies each other. But I had never heard of this as purifying your nervous system. And that's what that breathing in, you know, that cleansing breath kind of thought, that I'm aware of that, you know, that purification of breath.
Well, breath is, you know, the body purifies in a number of ways, the mind and body, but the body purifies in a number of ways. It purifies through breath, it purifies through sweat, urine, feces, and it also purifies through this discharge of that sticky white stuff on your tongue. They call that ama in Ayurveda. But breath is one of the primary ways the body purifies. Now, back to perfect health through perfect digestion, I even take that even to a more esoteric level. And what happens is, you know, we're born kind of happy-go-lucky, lighthearted beings, and without our even knowing it, stress starts to accumulate in our nervous system, whether it be from being in a loud environment or staying up too late. And, I mean, the list goes on and on, the sources of stress. But and being bullied at school or not, or just feeling anxious that you didn't do well in your paper, or having kids not being accepting and having too much to do and not enough time to do it, whatever the case may be, stress starts to accumulate in the nervous system. And I look at it this way. Imagine a glass table and stress starts to, I mean, and dust motes start to, you know, attract themselves to the table, and they start to, initially you don't notice, but eventually you notice there's kind of a thin layer of dust. You don't know where it comes from, but you can eventually write your name in it. And this is how I feel like stress is for us. Stress accumulates unnoticed often and becomes this layer, and I call it like a veil or a sheath of that blocks us from knowing who we really are, from being that lighthearted, radiant, creative soul that we really are. And it also prevents our radiance outward. So that's why I say, with meditation, you're purifying, you're dusting that table, you're purifying the stress out of the nervous system so that you can radiate who you really are. You can experience life as it really is outside of the veil of stress whether this mental stress or physical stress or even stress of old belief systems?
So some of that dusting the table then is what meditation is for.
And Absolutely.
Okay, so I know from your book, early on in the book, it talks about the fact that you talk about that meditation can help you experience more peace, freedom, compassion, creativity, connectedness, and awareness of the present moment. And that is actually science has proven that, you know, people have been studied and with things like neuroimaging and that thing in the brain about neuroplasticity. That's a hard word to say. Neuroplasticity. I can say it. You know, we're learning that, you know, we're not just stuck with X number of brain cells that we can mess up. We can give ourselves, do ourselves a favor, you know, like a dusting job.
Absolutely, and I love neuroplasticity. I was brought up with that belief that we only had a certain number of brain cells, and you can't, you know, don't do anything to you know, mess them up. And, you know, they used to think your brain was developed by the time you were 18, and that's the way it was. But they're finding now with these more refined instrumentations looking into deeper areas of the brain that the experience that most people have heard about of meditators, that they're more laid back and responsive and alert and peaceful and self-aware, those actual subjective experiences of a meditator are now provable through these brain studies that they're doing. And they're finding that, you know, so let's just take responsive rather than reactive. Meditators tend to have a lot less stress in the nervous system. Well, it shows that when people meditate and become less reactive to their thoughts in a meditative period, it actually starts to have an effect on the amygdala, the part of the brain that is reactive or responsible for the fight or flight response. So what happens is the subjective experience is more responsiveness in the meditation. You're training yourself not to be reactive, and ultimately you're changing the brain. The same goes for being self-aware. There's a part of the brain called the insula, and it's about being self-aware and being more emotionally aware of what's going on with you and with other people. And that starts to happen, too, with meditation. You start understanding, you know, what it feels like to be peaceful, what it feels like to be stressed. You know, you can make better choices because you're more attuned to how you're responding to your environment, and this makes a brain change as well. The insula starts to grow. And then there's one other part of the brain that's changing as well with meditation, which is the hippocampus, which is the part of the brain that is responsible for memory and clarity and focus and spatial relations, and that part of the brain gets larger. So, you know, we talk about, oh, yeah, the meditators are this way and that way, and in fact, it's true when we look at the effects in the brain. So it's, you know, there's so many benefits to meditation, whether you want to look at the physical benefits of lowered blood pressure, reduced cortisol levels, or the bad stress hormones in the body, whether you want to talk about reduced pain. A lot of chronic pain sufferers meditate. It helps to alleviate pressure on the cardiovascular system, improve circulation, improve digestion, improve sleep. Or whether we want to look at the mental benefits, which are improved decision-making, better focus, more clarity, better memory. And or if we want to look at the spiritual benefits, which are now my favorite, you know, which are being able to be in communion with the divine on a regular basis, being more intuitive, being more attuned to what you feel and think, so how you act is more in alignment with that. And being more compassionate with yourself and others. So many benefits to meditation. And everybody that comes to meditate has a different reason for wanting to do it, whether it's a stressed out, you know, business person, or whether it's somebody like me who is this young girl looking for the answers to these mysteries of life and searching everywhere for them.
Well, I have a sense that for me, a couple things are happening. I am not a meditator right now, you know, up until this point, until I'm speaking to you, I will say from this point forward, I think I shall be. And the reason is this. You know, I used to, and my mother did the same thing. Both of us have said for decades, I've got to go and collect my thoughts. And that was code for I've got to go take a nap. But
right.
We really didn't go take a nap necessarily. Sometimes it's just you have to leave the room, and let everybody just do what they're doing, and, you know, I've got to go collect my thoughts. And I've been saying that for years. And what that means is I have got to go inside and just, you know, just literally collect myself. And that is for focus and clarity and, you know, getting a little more intuition, or one of my favorite words is serenity. And it's something that I hope someday to have more of. You know, I'm intending to be more serene, but, you know, it's not easy. You know, it's a very stressful life sometimes. And
it can be. It can be.
Yes, it can be. So what you're telling me is that a more deliberate, if you will, structured, I'm going to say, meditation practice might be just what the doctor ordered for me.
I think you're right. Now, I want to just address what you said. You were collecting your thoughts, but I really would I bet that what you were really doing was collecting or recollecting yourself so that you're, you know, you're less, what's the word? You're less influenced by the external world. When you, you know, when you retreat, you simply are reconnecting with who you really are, what you really think, regardless of the external circumstances. Now, the name of my book is called Soul-Centered, and it's a word that I use to describe a way of being in the world where no matter what the external world is focused on, what's going on in the external world, no matter what's going on out there, what people think of you, what decisions they're making, there's a center point where you collected your thoughts. You know, there's this center point of peace and harmony and presence and stability, and there's this part of us that's always there. And to be soul-centered is to have that be our center point. So when you leave the room, and that's one way to do it, is to reestablish your own equilibrium, reestablish your own stability, your own self-referral process, the ability to refer to yourself rather than how your crazy family or your crazy neighbor or whatever it is that's making you a little, you know, off-center. So one way to do it, and that's what meditation really helps with, is meditation really helps to establish a real deep connection. And this goes back to neuroplasticity again, but it helps to establish such a deep connection with that peaceful interior world that we easily can come back to that peace. And because you do it every day, ideally people meditate at least once a day, every day, for a period of 10 to 30 minutes. And, you know, I have a CD. I have a lot of free meditations you can get on my website, but I think I sent you the CD.
You did.
There's instruction on there. Just listen to that. There's a guided meditation, and it will. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to feel any certain way. You simply sit down to do it, and it purifies your nervous system, so that when you are rocked, you know, out of your center, you can go right back easily. You've created this this well-worn pathway into that and that connection back to that peaceful center of yours.
I love that. Now, also in your book, you say that when you are soul-centered, you're not dependent upon others for your sense of self or worthiness, and that you are also open to all possibilities, and that
yes.
You can receive the moment and welcome it. I thought that was the most brilliant writing. Receive the moment and welcome it. In other words, sometimes the moments go by, and if you're not aware, like you've been talking about, and you've got too much dust on your psychic table, you're not going to see that moment, and it might be the moment, like with a capital the.
Well, let's just go back to what you were saying. Thank you, by the way, for saying it was brilliant writing, but going back to what you were saying is you intend to be more serene. Well, you know, when is that?
Yeah, I know.
You know, my neighbor here is Hale Dwoskin. He runs the Sedona Method. He goes, when would now be a good time? When would now be a good time for that? So in truth, there is no future. Future is an idea. Yeah, you know, you may, obviously, you're going to get up tomorrow and do something else, and you may have something planned for a few months from now. The future is an idea, and it's always experienced in the present moment. So this moment right here is sort of where the future is unveiled. It's unrolling itself at your feet, really. So we talk about stress, and one of the things that starts to show up with stress is people have an affinity either to be projecting a lot of times on the future or spending a lot of times dwelling in the past, and they rarely are present for the moment at hand. And then there are those people who are present for the moment at hand, but they've got a distorted, they've got a kind of a distorted filter where they're looking for whatever's going wrong in the moment. You know, they've got something like that going on. We have thousands and thousands of thoughts a day, and most of the thoughts are not about what's going on right here, right now. So what happens is we're distracted by our mental activity, and that distracts us out of this present moment. This moment right now, right here, is the moment that we're living our life. This is it. You could have plans for a fabulous vacation in a week, but that is going to happen in the now, in the present moment. You'll experience it. So the more we can train our attention to be in the present moment, the more able we are to receive the moment, even if we don't like it so much, and to enjoy the moment when it's fabulous, savoring our lives, rather than having our life turn into a series of ideas and expectations. We actually get to have the experience of our life. And this is a very subtle and maybe different thing to talk about, but this is where our life is. It's right here, right now, with me and you. We're on the radio. We're talking. This is my life. This is it.
Well,
it's not somewhere else.
You're absolutely right, and let me just share with you. We've been together now for half an hour, actually a little longer because we were in the green room together.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole time that you've been talking and I've been keeping up with you, I've been taking notes like crazy. I've got six sides of paper going, and I've got two different colors of pens. And until we started talking about this moment, and I put my pen down and not even realizing what was happening, I realized that to honor you and me and this moment, I really needed to be completely here. And if I never have another cogent thought, which I know is not going to happen, but it just doesn't matter. You know, I don't have to write and be ready to receive the wonderful things that are happening for us right now.
And that's how life is, because life is intelligent. You're intelligent innately. You don't have to have your notes, although they can be helpful. You know, if we slow down, trust this moment, are present for this moment, we'll be in touch with our intuition. Intuition is only available in the present moment. We will be in touch with the divine if you have that affinity. The only time you can commune with the divine is in the present moment. It doesn't happen in the future or the past. God will be here now if that's what you're looking for. Serenity. You want to be more serene. How are you feeling right now? Check in with yourself. Are you feeling serene?
I am.
See that?
I am.
So you
I
already am. Are everything
yeah.
you want.
Isn't that beautiful? All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting, and I'm not going to say it was an exercise because it wasn't, but just for to put a frame around it is not necessary. But thank you. Let's just go with thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Well, everybody, that's what meditation will teach us to do. Meditation is a training of your awareness. It trains your attention in at least three different ways. But the first way is it trains you to be more present. Because let's say you're doing a meditation paying attention to your breath. The breath is always in the present moment. Yes, you'll breathe again tomorrow, and yes, you breathed yesterday. But to feel your breath, it helps to anchor your awareness in the present moment. And if you're listening to me, you can just turn your attention to your breath, and you can feel the breath. You can only feel things in the moment. You can only feel them as they're happening. That's what I mean about not missing your life. But now when you're meditating and you're paying attention to either a breath or a mantra or a body sensation, you're training your attention to be in the present moment. And that helps to train you outside of meditation to be present for your life. The second thing that meditation helps you to do is it helps you to turn your attention inward. Most of the time, if you look at your senses, they're focused outward. You're looking at things, you're smelling, hearing, feeling, seeing things, tasting things. Everything's externally focused. And when you turn your attention inward through, you know, a deliberate practice of meditation, you start to train your attention to move inward and become more self-aware. How am I feeling? What's going on right now in my body? How's my breath? What am I thinking about? Instead of having the thoughts go on and sort of be constant in the background. So it trains you to be more present, it trains you to focus your attention inward, and it also helps you to focus on one thing at a time, which is what you did when you put your pen down. You were focused on listening to me. And when you focus on one thing at a time, you get to experience your life at one thing at a time, whether it's eating some delicious cake or listening to a friend call you and talk to you about their wonderful day, or whether it's being with your animals and just, you know, being present with them. Whatever it is, one thing at a time helps you to fully savor that. Meditation trains your attention in so many other ways, but those are three main ways that they do train your attention, and so that when you're out of the meditative period, you get to be present for yourself. You get to be more inward and self-aware even while you're in activity, and you get to be more present to the moment that's going on.
Now, you have obviously meditated with and taught a lot of people how to meditate. Have you got any examples of someone who has had an amazing experience in, you know, how they are after they've meditated?
Sure. I have so many. They're in my book, actually. But I love to first of all tell people I'm calling you or talking to you from Sedona, Arizona, one of the mystical capitals, you know, in this world. And
no kidding.
But people come here with all sorts of expectations about what mysticism is and what, you know, higher states of consciousness is and what spirituality is. And they come here with a lot of expectations about what they should or shouldn't experience. What I like to tell people is, and this goes along with your question, is in meditation you might have some really neat experiences. You might see colors. You might have insights. You might feel a certain wave of bliss. However, most of the time we meditate, it's boring. I got to just give you that. It's boring, and it's not so much what happens in meditation. But what's the most important thing is what starts to happen after you meditate, and that's where I'm going to answer your question from. Yes, there's a man, and I love to call him the reluctant meditator, because he showed up here. His colleagues called him Judge Meany. He's a judge, a Superior Court Justice in Maricopa County, where you've all heard about Joe Arpaio, and we have this crazy serial killer down there that was shooting a lot of people and animals and things like that, and he's always in charge of the serial killings, prosecutions, and judging. So here's this man, doesn't believe in meditation whatsoever. His friends and colleagues call him Judge Meany, and his heart doctor says, look, you have to get rid of the stress. You're so stressed out that we can keep medicating you, but it's not going to help you. So you've got to get to the bottom of this. So as a favor to a friend, he shows up here to meet the friend to learn to meditate. Well, the friend doesn't come. And so here he is in my meditation studio, and he learns to meditate. And immediately his blood pressure dropped. He was able to lose a ton of weight. His demeanor completely changed. He ended up, believe it or not, finding out he had cancer, and he was able to deal with that without going into some sort of crazy rage or reactivity. He was able to be really present for his cancer. Then he ended up becoming a meditation teacher.
Oh, my gosh.
I can't even believe it. Yeah, now he teaches. He's still a judge. He's elected all the time, but he's chosen to now work with teens in the judicial system. So when they arrive at his bench, he can really make a difference in their lives and say, hey, do you really want your life to go this way? You know, when they're so impressionable in these teenage courts, you know, he can really make a big difference to them, and he's present for them. So here he is teaching other lawyers and judges how to meditate. He's peaceful. He walks around with like this choker with a peace sign on it. I mean, this man, his whole life has changed. It's only been 5 years, and now that may not be the way you want your life to change, but that's an example of how it can radically shift your life. Now, some people, like for me, I never spoke in public. That may sound really strange, but I was always behind the scenes. I was behind Deepak Chopra. I was behind Gary Zukav. I could speak one-on-one. I could speak in classes and, you know, read from textbooks and workbooks and things like that. But I never, ever felt comfortable to speak in front of large groups of people. And when I moved to Sedona about 10 years ago, people would say, would you get out and speak? I was on a lot of boards for environmental issues, and they'd say, get up and speak and tell us about the board. I couldn't do it. I said, I don't do that. And all of a sudden, I heard myself say, I don't do that, just like writing a book, I don't do that. And I said, well, why don't I do that? And all of a sudden I said, I'll do it. I'll try it. I know it's going to be scary, but I'll do it. And now that's what I do. I speak to hundreds and thousands of people all the time. And I write. I write books.
Right.
So it can happen to anybody. I mean, this is not, I'm not some magical person. I just became self-aware. I started to really tune in to what my desires were and tune in to my potential, and I stopped the habitual responses of the reactivity. You know, I don't do that, you know, and started to go, well, wait, maybe I do that.
Right. Well, sort of like I am now serene. I'm not waiting for it. Well,
good.
You know, when you were talking about the judge, I was saying to myself that stress can kill you. So you can medicate or meditate.
Exactly. And, you know, they had this, I think it was in Time magazine years ago, stress, the silent killer, because most people don't know how stressed out they are until they get the diagnosis or someone walks out of their life that they loved or, you know, they've lost their mind and they're on all these medications or something. I mean, it just sneaks up on us just like that dust on the table. It doesn't hit you often. It doesn't hit you like a big baseball bat. But it does, you know, for soldiers and post-traumatic and people who go through trauma. But, you know, stress can accumulate without a lot of traumatic experiences. And, you know, it has different manifestations for different people. Some people have a physical manifestation of stress. Some people have the emotional or mental manifestations of stress. Some people have, you know, the spiritual manifestation of stress. And so each person has a different software, and each person has a different response to life physically, mentally, and emotionally. And that's why you can't say, well, if you're stressed, you're the one who's going to have the high blood pressure. Well, you can't know that. You might be the one who grinds your teeth. You might be the one who's just depressed. Who knows? But the wake-up call is when you start going, I cannot live like this. I cannot live like this, and I don't have to.
Exactly. Well, I've been on blood pressure medicine since 1987.
Wow.
And I would venture to say that talking to you and some of the other people that have been on my show here lately and just having a different intention for my 59th birthday, which is coming up next week, I have a sense that I am not going to stay on blood pressure medicine. I think I can actually do a lot better dealing with whatever is going on, you know, to just get rid of it. I do.
Yeah.
I believe it, and I think that it's the right time. The teachers have come. You know, you're wonderful. Your book is phenomenal. I am just really in a great place, and I just know that I can do it.
You can do it, and it just requires you to make some make some changes in your habits in terms of your daily routine. Meditation only works if you do it. You know, even if you do it 5 minutes once a day, the basics are to not be hard on yourself and to know that you'll always have thoughts in meditation. It's just natural. You know, just get rid of those ideas that you're going to stop thinking because it's not going to happen. There may be moments of peace, let's put it that way. But you're not doing it wrong if you have thoughts. You know, if you go on my website, Sedona, S-E-D-O-N-A, meditation.com, the five essentials to meditation, which will really help you to get started on meditation. Of course, my book is like that too, and the CD. But the truth is, you know, don't try to do it without some sort of guidance, because you might not stick with it. And it only works if you do it, and you have to be nice to yourself while you're doing it. So I really do recommend guidance, whether it's me or somebody else that you go to learn, because it can be tricky to navigate that interior world without the shoulds of meditation should be this way or that way. You know, you want to address it with a beginner's mind and sort of have somebody help you through that. But, you know, just in terms of what America's going through or the Western world, you know, where a lot of us are always stressed, that we don't even realize it. It's our modus operandi. You know, it's like that's how it is. It's how we operate. And we don't even notice stress until it's gone. It's like somebody turning off a loud noise, a loud fan in your room. You don't even notice the fan, but the minute the fan's turned off, there's this silence. And with stress, it has an effect on the cardiovascular system, because stress is really, it puts us in the fight or flight response, even on a subtle level. And that's when we release all those hormones of, you know, adrenaline and cortisol. It starts messing up our blood sugar. And what starts to happen is it puts a lot of pressure on our heart and lungs to oxygenate our body to set and makes our blood pressure go up so that we can send the blood. It's got a real reason for this, so we can send the blood to our arms and legs so we can fight or flee if there's a real threat.
Right.
But the thing is, there's not a real threat. You have too much to do, not enough time to do it. Maybe, you know, you have some too many bills to pay and not enough money to pay them, you know. That's not a threat that needs your blood pressure to go up, you know.
I know, and I can point to some things that are probably culprits in various points of my life since 1987, and I think that, you know, I got through all of it beautifully. You know, I'm still here and still, you know, able to crack jokes and, you know, have fun and do that. But I still have this blood pressure medicine. I'm thinking, oh, gosh, you know, what's up with that? So I know that there's work interior work that I have to do, and that's fine. I mean, I'm ready for it. You know, I wasn't ready before, and now I am. So
fine. So be nice to yourself. Don't worry about it. That's what that medication's for. It's not forever. It's simply to hold you over till you you can do something about it. And that's, you know, antidepressants are the same way. It's not bad that people take them. It shouldn't be an endless, you know, sort of an endless way of handling stress. You know, most of us in America, we deal with stress by masking the symptoms of it, whether it's indigestion or insomnia or depression or anxiety or high blood pressure or, you know, diabetes. All of those are effects of too much stress in the nervous system. And so, you know, pharmaceutical companies love it because it's an endless income stream for them, and there's not a lot of money to be made seriously to say, you know what, you should really meditate. I mean, meditation's a one-hit wonder. You come to me, you buy a book, and you've got it for the rest of your life. You put the pharmaceutical company, you know, you take a little money away from them, and you get to do it without their help, because they're not treating the source of the problem.
Right.
You know, and that's what we want to treat, is what is the source of that?
Well, you know, that stress is not just a silent killer of the body, but it's also a silent killer of creativity.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And, you know, what do you think about that, the nexus between stress and creativity? Or would you rather talk about the nexus between creativity and meditation?
Well, we can talk about all of that. Let me tell you this. Remember I talked about the veil of stress that kind of masks who you really are from expressing itself, this veil of stress that accumulates?
Uh-huh.
Well, who you really are is everybody has these qualities of their own soul. If you answer the question, who are you, and you don't relate to your relationships or your positions or anything you've had, your possessions or your numbers, your age or your weight or your letters, you know, if you answer the question, who are you, without relating to those external modalities, what would you say, how would you answer that question?
You know, you're not going to believe this, but the first thing I would have said is, I am love.
I would totally believe that. That is who you are. And if you believe this, if you believe that your soul is a spark of the divine, right, maybe you're a wave in the ocean of the divine sea of consciousness, then you are part of that. And what is that? What is your soul? Your soul is love, absolutely. It's compassionate. It's wise. It's whole and it's perfect. But guess what else it is? It's creative. It's attending to all possibilities. It's inclusive. It's spontaneous. And it's creative, and we'll stick with that for now, because if you think of you're a spark of the ocean, if you're a spark of the divine, the qualities of the divine are also in you. And, of course, if we call the divine the creator, then the divine must be creative, and so are you. So what happens, though, that veil starts to mask that creativity. Creativity can only be accessed in the present moment. And when we're stressed out and thinking about the past or future, it's hard to be creative. When we're right here, right now, we can access that creative voice, that intuition, whatever it is that moves you to manifesting your creativity. It's only accessible in the moment. And, of course, like I said, meditation helps you to train your attention to be in the present moment where your creativity can be made manifest. So I hope that helps. It helps to wipe that table clean so you can radiate that creativity.
Right. No, I totally understand that. And I love the image of being able to dust.
Yeah, me too.
It's very physical. It's like, okay, I've got to go dust, or I've got to go collect my thoughts, or I've got to go and you know, get right with myself so that, and I know that's not the right way to put it. But
no, it is. That's exactly what it is. You're getting right with who you really are. Not with who you think you should be.
Right.
Not with who other people think you should be, but with your real, real integrity. Everybody's got different values. Everybody's got different expressions of their own soul. And there's no right or wrong, but get right with who you are. Get in line with who you are. Become, you know, in integrity. What did Gandhi say? You know, peace is when what you think, what you say, and what you do are all in alignment. Getting right with yourself is aligning with that.
Well, that's fantastic, because that's my vernacular for saying it, and I'm glad it was right.
Yeah. I mean, when we hit right, but here's another. Let's talk about Rumi. He's a mystical poet, you know, from, what is it, the 13th century? I don't even know if that's right. But he said, outside of ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there's a field, and I'll meet you there. So getting right with yourself is one thing. Calling things right or wrong, mm-hmm. that's a judgment. But getting
right
with yourself, there's a difference there. So
that's right. Well, this has been fantastic. And for the next few minutes, I would like to do two things. I want to make sure that people know, again, how to reach you, how to get more of you, how to get your fantastic book. And I know that you are involved very heavily with the Spirit Spectacular, which is happening Saturday, September 8th at Unity of Phoenix, and I want you to be able to talk about that. So first, let our listeners know how they can reach you and get your book and so forth, and then
okay.
Talk about the Spirit Spectacular.
Sure. Well, I teach meditation here in Sedona, and I also teach it in Phoenix. Now, that's really where I teach most of the time. I do travel quite a bit. I'm going to be in California, and I'll be in Colorado, and I do teach where I travel. And you can find out my schedule by going to Sedona, S-E-D-O-N-A, meditation.com. And I also, what's exciting, what's happening here in Sedona in October is what I call the Soul Radiance Retreat. I've been doing it for 5 years, and it's a retreat where people get to learn to meditate, and they get to immerse themselves in a lot of the exercises and walk into their interior world. And it's a beautiful way to support yourself to establish, really, a feeling of what it feels like to be soul-centered. And that's happening in mid-October, and you can go to my website to find that out. Now, in terms of the Spirit Spectacular, I'm going to get the details. Do you have, here it is, it's on Saturday, September 8th. It's an all-day program at the Unity of Phoenix in Phoenix. And you can go to, I'm wondering what is the best website.
I can give it to you. I have it.
Oh, good.
I have it. Uh-huh. It's www.unitypx.org, unitypx.org. Or you can call, I have had all my papers completely organized until
I got you in the present
moment. exactly. Or you can call 602-978-3200. And inquire about tickets. Uh-huh.
Great. Well, I'm excited. It's going to be a whole day of immersion. They've got some great, great speakers, and I'm thrilled to be there, and I'm happy to meet people and sign books, and I'll be talking a little bit about meditation and obviously and about attention and how to create a wonderful life for yourself. So I'm excited about that. And also, just for people who want to dabble in meditation before they, you know, buy the book or get a CD, you can just go on my website, SedonaMeditation.com, and you can sign up for free meditations. Now, I am not one of those people who send out regular emails, and people actually email me and say, am I still on your list? So I'm not one that will bother you because I'm over here meditating. But if you want to sign up, I will send you some information on that. I'm also going to be at the Celebrate Your Life conference in November here in Sedona at the Enchantment Resort. And for those of you, a lot of people in Arizona know about this. It's a great program, and I'll be leading meditations there. So I'm, you know, I just love to do what I do, and I love to meditate with you, and it's my favorite. I'm so lucky to have this job.
Well, yes, and it doesn't sound like a job because of it.
Right.
Exactly. Well, I want to go back to the Spirit Spectacular because I will meet you there.
Good.
I'm going to be there, absolutely. And what I like is that they're calling it a spa day for the soul. Doesn't that sound wonderful?
Yeah. I didn't know they were saying that. I'm looking at it now. That's great.
I love that. I mean, I totally get that you can pamper from the inside out.
Oh, absolutely.
I just think that is so special. So I will meet you at the Spirit Spectacular at Unity of Phoenix on Saturday, September 8th. It goes from 8:15 in the morning until 6:15 at night. I look forward to giving you a hug and thanking you for being with me. I will thank you now for being with me, but it's wonderful.
Yeah, we're having fun. I'm so glad we got a chance to be on this show and do this together.
Absolutely. All right, well, I will say goodbye for now, and I am going to go and listen to your CD that you sent me. I appreciate that so much, and I'm going to get the hang of this. I am serene.
You are. You already are serene. That's one of the qualities of your soul. And, you know, that CD, I know a lot of people don't have CD players in their cars anymore, in their houses, so they listen to it in the car, but I don't suggest listening to those meditations as you drive.
I don't know. That's not a good idea.
No, but I'm glad. I'm glad you've got that, and share it with your friends, and hopefully it will, and come to one of my classes sometime when I'm down there. I teach quite a bit down there.
I will do that. And again, it's wonderful Sarah McLean, the author of Soul Centered, Transform Your Life in 8 Weeks with Meditation. Thank you so much for being with me here today.
Thank you, Deborah. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye now, everyone. Pathways to Wisdom is a production of Boomer and the Babe Incorporated. You can find out more about Boomer and the Babe Incorporated by visiting our website at boomerandthebabe.com.